Hello, and welcome back to True Crime Cat Lawyer. I'm your host, Elise. Every week, I share true crime cases from my hometown of the Pacific Northwest. My goal is to create ethical true crime content and educate others about the legal/criminal justice system. Please be sure to follow us on social media at True Crime Cat Lawyer for Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and True Crime Cat Law on Twitter. And please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or a rating on Spotify. We also have a Patreon page, which is linked in our show notes. Or you can head to patreon.com to join for just $5 a month. All proceeds from our Patreon are donated to animal rescues and shelters. Finally, we now have an Etsy sticker shop where you can buy true crime and cat stickers. Again, all proceeds from the sticker shop are donated to animal rescues and shelters. The link to the sticker shop is in our show notes, but you can also find us by searching True Crime Cat Lawyer in Etsy. As always, this podcast contains content of a graphic nature, including physical and sexual violence, suicide, and crimes against animals and children. Listener discretion is advised. In the early morning hours of March 25th, 1993, Darrell Stenson called 911. He was out of breath and talking really fast. He told the dispatcher, quote, "Frank just shot my wife and himself," end quote. When police arrived on scene, they met Darrell Stenson. Stenson led police to a downstairs bedroom where Frank Horner was lying face down on the floor. Horner was dead after being shot in the head, but he'd also been hit in the head with a blunt object before being shot, and he had bruises on his knees, buttocks, and hip. Police then moved upstairs where they found Stenson's wife, Denise. She was completely naked, in bed, still alive, but she'd also been shot in the head. Sadly, Denise later died at the hospital. Stenson told police that he thought Horner shot Denise and then killed himself in another room. Stenson told police that Horner had stopped by early that morning to sign some business papers. Stenson was an exotic bird dealer in Squim, Washington. Horner had invested $48,000 in Stenson's business. According to Stenson, he and Horner were in Stenson's office that morning, which was located in a separate building on the 5-acre property Stenson lived on with his family. At some point during their meeting, Horner excused himself to use the bathroom. When Horner failed to come back, Stenson went looking for him. And that's when Stenson found both Horner and Denise and offered the murder-suicide theory. Stenson also told police that the night before the deaths, he and Denise had dinner with Horner and his wife. After dinner, Stenson called Horner and told him to come sign insurance paperwork for the ostriches that Stenson was buying on Horner's behalf from Texas. Horner said he was too tired to come over that night, but he said that he'd stop by on his way to work around 3:30 a.m. Stenson also told police that Horner was interested in his wife Denise, and he told police that Horner complained about his marriage to Stenson. Stenson consented to a search of his property, including his home, outbuildings, and cars. Stenson also voluntarily gave his clothes to police. As the investigation unfolded, it became clear that Horner didn't commit suicide. Like I mentioned before, Horner had been hit in the back of the head with a blunt object. The coroner believed that Horner was beaten with a nunchuck, as the appearance of his wounds was consistent with that type of weapon. Investigators believed that Horner was hit in the head in the Stenson's driveway and then dragged into the Stenson home. Gravel was found in a cut on the palm of Horner's hand. Spatters of Horner's blood were found in the Stenson's driveway and their laundry room. Darrell Stenson was arrested on April 8, 1993. He was charged with 2 counts of premeditated first-degree murder with aggravating circumstances. But why would Stenson kill his own wife and his business investor? Prosecutors argued that Stenson shot his wife Denise and then shot Horner to collect $400,000 in life insurance and to quote-unquote silence Horner and keep him from collecting the money that he'd invested with Stenson for the ostriches. Stenson and his family lived on a 5-acre farm, making rent payments with the understanding that Stenson would eventually buy the property when he was financially able to do so. According to the prosecution, the owner of the farm, Kit Eldridge, was pressuring Stenson to buy the property per their prior agreement. Their last conversation was in February 1993. Stenson told Eldridge that he was going to buy the property soon because his business was going well. But was that true? According to Stenson's books for his business, the $48,000 from Horner was listed as a deposit for Byrds. But at the time of Horner's murder, Stenson's books noted only one purchase had been made, and that purchase was for two smaller Byrds, totaling under $2,000. Prosecutors presented evidence that just before the murders, Stenson was considering filing for bankruptcy. It was also discovered that the bank account for the farm only had a balance of approximately $3,400. An audit showed that the money Horner invested had been spent on Stenson's personal expenses. Prior to the murders, Stenson sought out large loans. He also purchased a mortgage insurance policy of $300,000 and had another $100,000 in life insurance policies for his wife, Denise. Frank Horner's wife, also named Denise, testified at trial. She said that Stenson had convinced her husband that he could double his money by investing in the exotic bird business. She testified that Stenson told her husband that he could, quote-unquote, get rich and have a better life than working so hard as a carpet installer. After those conversations, Horner started investing in Stenson's business. The money that he invested came from the sale of Horner's house. Like I mentioned before, Stenson only bought two birds for the Horners, and neither one of them were ostriches, as he had promised. About a month before the murders, Horner was getting worried about his investment, and he told Stenson that he either wanted the ostriches or he wanted his money back. Stenson told Horner that he had to keep his money in the business account to show quote-unquote Asian investors that he had money in order to get a loan from them. Denise Horner testified that her husband started getting worried again when Stenson went to Texas to get the ostriches and came back empty-handed. Stenson told Horner not to worry, he'd be going back to Texas on March 23rd to get the birds. Denise Horner also testified that on the morning of the murders, she believed that her husband took another $10,000 over to the Stenson's house to pay toward insurance for the birds. Another key witness at trial was Roger Peel from the FBI. Peel testified about gunshot residue testing performed in the case, including testing performed on the pants that Stenson was wearing on the night of the murders. Peel implied that he conducted the GSR testing himself, but it would later be revealed that the testing was actually performed by a lab trainee. After deliberating for somewhere between an hour and 2 days, Stenson was convicted on August 11, 1994. He was sentenced to death. In 1997, the Washington State Supreme Court affirmed Stenson's conviction and death sentence. But that's not the end of Stenson's story. Stenson tried to challenge the constitutionality of lethal injection, but in November 2008, the court rejected his request for a stay of execution. Stenson then filed an emergency motion for discretionary review of the stay ruling with the Washington State Supreme Court. On November 21, 2008, Stenson filed a civil rights action in the U.S. District Court, again challenging the constitutionality of the lethal injection. A few days later, the District Court ordered a stay of execution. The stay came just weeks before Stenson was scheduled to be executed. Around the same time, the Clallam County Prosecutor's Office told Stenson's lawyers that the FBI was concerned about bullet lead analysis testimony. Specifically, the FBI, quote, might have expressed opinions that went beyond what the science supported, end quote. The biggest problem was, the FBI file wasn't provided to Stenson's defense attorneys until 2009, after Stenson was convicted. And that's a huge problem because it's a Brady violation. In case you aren't familiar, Brady v. Maryland is a U.S. Supreme Court case. This case held that prosecutors have a constitutional duty to disclose any material exculpatory information in their possession to the defense. This includes any information favorable to the defense that might reduce the defendant's potential sentence, any information that goes against the credibility of an unfavorable witness, or information that otherwise allows a jury to infer against the defendant's guilt. The duty to disclose this information exists regardless of whether or not the defense has actually requested it. And that duty is breached regardless of whether the information was withheld intentionally or unintentionally. To establish a Brady violation, a defendant must show, one, the evidence at issue was favorable to the accused, either because it's exculpatory or impeaching, Two, the evidence was suppressed willfully or inadvertently, and that suppression resulted in prejudice. And three, the defendant didn't possess the evidence, nor could they get the evidence themselves with reasonable diligence. The most common outcome of a Brady violation is having a conviction overturned. In the FBI file, there were photos of the lead detective wearing Stenson's pants during a quote-unquote forensic session 6 days before GSR testing was performed. One photo in particular showed the detective wearing Stenson's pants without protective gloves, holding the pockets inside out. In Stenson's case, the failure to provide the FBI file to his defense attorneys ultimately contributed to his conviction being overturned and him getting a new trial. The Washington Supreme Court upheld the Superior Court's finding that the FBI files and photos of the detective wearing Stenson's bloodstained pants were wrongfully withheld or suppressed by the prosecution back in 1994. This suppression prejudiced Stenson, therefore his conviction and death sentence were overturned. In 2013, Stenson was retried for the murders of his wife and Frank Horner. The trial was moved to Kitsap County due to the publicity of the case. But Clallam County prosecutors were still in charge of the case. And the county spent nearly $1 million to retry Stenson, which was the most expensive trial in the county's history at that time. At the retrial, Stenson's attorneys tried to point the finger at Horner's wife, Denise. They argued that the Horners had an unhappy marriage and Denise had seen a lawyer about a possible divorce. The Horners allegedly had a prenup, which meant, according to the defense, quote, the only way Denise could get anything out of the marriage was to kill Frank, end quote. Stenson's attorneys also claimed that Horner's wife, Denise, talked to people about killing her husband for insurance money. Stenson's attorneys also told the jury that police mishandled evidence and didn't follow other leads because, quote, all they were looking for were facts that proved their hypothesis, end quote, that Stenson was guilty. After a 6-week-long trial, Stenson was again convicted of both murders in November 2013. He was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole, as the prosecutor opted not to seek the death penalty in the retrial. The Washington Court of Appeals upheld his conviction. On March 24, 2017, Stenson filed a motion for review with the Washington State Supreme Court. It's unclear what happened with Stenson's case after that, but he remains incarcerated at the Coyote Ridge Correction Center in Connell, Washington. Thank you for listening to this episode. Please subscribe to the show on whatever podcast app you're currently listening on. If you haven't already, we'd appreciate it if you left a review or rating of our show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. All of our sources for this episode can be found in our show notes. If you're interested in supporting our show, you can join our Patreon for just $5 a month. The link is in our show notes, but you can also go to patreon.com/truecrimecatlawyer. Patreon members receive bonus content, a shout out in an episode, and other goodies throughout the year. Patreon members also get an exclusive promo code and sticker when they shop in our Etsy store. Speaking of our Etsy shop, you can find the link to the shop in our show notes or search for True Crime Cat Lawyer on Etsy. We have all kinds of true crime and cat stickers, plus some true crime beaded pens. All of the proceeds from our Patreon and Etsy shop are donated to animal rescues and shelters. This is an important mission of ours, and we've proudly donated to over 11 organizations so far. And last but not least, if you're interested in learning more about Podcat Winston, you can find her on Instagram at WinstonTheCatPDX. Thanks again for listening, and stay tuned for our next episode.